back, everybody, to the newest episode of thepenpodcast.com. I'm your host, Matthew Harms, founder of Pen for Hire, where we offer premier ghostwriting and author coaching services. Also the creators of the Pen Podcast, where we sit with authors, writers, writing industry professionals, subject matter experts, and all around interesting people. Today, I am joined by someone who fits many of those bills in the amazing Dana Knowles. How are you, Dana?
I'm great. Happy New Year, everyone. It is the 2nd of January, and I'm thrilled to start out the year like this. This is a great, great opportunity.
Yes, I'm glad. As we were talking behind the scenes, it's already off to a bit of an interesting start, but that's okay. I've got this time with you, and I think everyone's going to enjoy it as much as I do. But I also have kind of the cheat sheet because I know a little bit of your story.
Yeah, you do.
So I think what we need to do with you, Dana, let's start from the present and go backwards, right? Because the backstories are where a lot of the interesting stuff is. But what are you doing? You are a motivational speaker, correct?
I am a motivational speaker, a beginner motivational speaker. I mean, I have a lot of speaking background, but nothing on the big stage like a TEDx talk or anything like that. But, you know, I do share my experience with anybody who will listen, basically. So, and I'm also the director of Inventor Relations at a company called InventRight. So wear a couple different hats over there. We help inventors bring their products to market through licensing. We're kind of like a trade school for inventors. And then, of course, I own a tuxedo rental business that I've owned for the last 15 years that I'm going to sell this year. So I'm real excited about that. It's kind of a bittersweet, you know, I'm done with it, but it's time for me to move on to different goals and dreams that I have and spend more time accomplishing those. I'm also the wife of the mayor of the city of Martinsburg, West Virginia. So technically I'm the first lady of Martinsburg, West Virginia. So that's kind of cool. And other than that, you know, I'm just plugging along, and this is the year I really want to push my book.
I love it. We're going to jump back as I promised, but first I got to know, you're getting rid of the tuxedo business. What are some of these plans you have that are going to occupy your time, especially in prom season, wedding season?
Well, you know, I've been running the business for 15 years. We survived COVID, which many businesses didn't survive, especially in the entertainment industry. And that's what we would be considered. You know, if there's no events, no weddings, no prom, there's no business. And through COVID, I kind of got a little bit of a taste of retirement or what that might look like. And I kind of liked it that I could, you know, I had months to just do whatever I wanted to do. A lot of it was, you know, not so much working on the book, but thinking about other things and what do I want to do. And then, you know, I have a great manager, Rusty, who has really taken ownership of the business over the last, you know, not actual ownership, but, you know, really took an ownership role. And so I had approached him a couple of years ago and said, would you like to purchase the business if I want to sell it? And he said, absolutely. So I've really given him a lot more responsibility. Basically, the only thing I do down there is pay the bills now. And he's run the whole show. And it's proven to me that he can do it, but it also had to prove to himself that he could do it. So that'll happen. We're going to do one more prom season because that's like the big bread and butter for me. And I don't want to miss that big chunk of money coming in over, you know, a 6-week period of time. And then probably in June, we'll do the transfer of everything.
It's funny, from what you just mentioned, the only part of my business I'd like to sell right now is the paying of the bills.
I know. But, you know, I've been in the customer service business and having my own, you know, the tuxedo business is a very stressful time for people. I mean, the renting of the tuxedo for the weddings, and, you know, it has its ups and downs. Mostly it's good, but you know what? I just think I'm just done. It's been 15 years and I don't have the passion that I used to have for it. And it's just time.
Well, and quite honestly, I mean, this is probably a good time for us to go back to the beginning a little bit, but knowing of you, what I know, I think not that you're not filling a need in the tuxedo business and not that you're not helping people, but I think based on your story and the reason you wrote the book, you can have such a bigger impact if that time was free to focus on reaching more people that you can help who maybe in situations like you were.
Correct. And I still do that. And we'll probably, I know we're going to get into that part of my book and my story, but you know, helping people is really what I want to do. And I'm not a psychologist, psychiatrist. I don't have any great degrees behind my name, but I have 62 years of experience and a good 26 of those being sober and really learning how to have a fulfilled life and mostly just dealing with life as it comes our way. So I'll be able to concentrate a lot on that. I'm actually in the process now of doing TEDx applications, and I have my talk all written and my, you know, you got there's a whole process to get on the TEDx stage. And so that's, you know, I always love a challenge. I think maybe that's too why the tuxedo business, it's not a challenge for me anymore. You know, growing the business and making it succeed and surviving COVID and all of that, it was a challenge. And now it's just like, okay, so what do I do now? You know, what do I do now?
Yeah, I can totally relate. So I'm not going to put the words in your mouth, even though I think you said it, but I'm gonna let you do it. What was the main reason you decided to write your book?
Probably one of the big reasons is that I had a lot of people saying, you should write a book. And my life pre-sober, I'm a recovering drug addict and alcoholic, and you know, and see, I look at my life and say, yeah, I survived it. You know, yeah, a lot of bad things happened to me, and I survived it. It's not that big of a deal. But to the average person who didn't go down the path I went down, I guess it's pretty amazing to them. And so, as people would get to know me over the years, they would just say, wow, your life was so exciting. And it was so interesting. You should write a book. And I ignored it. I ignored all that. You should write a book. You should write a book. Until there was one particular person. His name is Stephen Key. He has become my mentor in the inventor world. And he's also my boss at this point now. He owns InventRight. And he got to know me a little bit better on a more personal note, business, professional, personal. And he said, your story is amazing. You're an amazing person. You've overcome so much. You should write a book. And that was the one that kind of kicked me over the edge a little bit to say, okay, let's write a book. And that's where you came in.
Well, and I've got to say, I mean, knowing your story as you told it to me, I absolutely knew you needed to write a book. But I want to just back that up a second, because sometimes, like, I maybe didn't see the excitement that some people saw. What I saw was the opportunity, because, you know, if you know me like you know me, Dana, I want to tell people stories that are not just going to glorify bad behavior, glorify great accomplishments, but really have a lesson that people can take away from it. So yes, while you did a lot of things where it was like, that could have been on a Netflix series, was that really what the thing that needed to be told? No, I mean, it's where you were to where you've gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was just, you know, I did not know when, you know, back in 1997, when I landed in a drug and alcohol treatment center and in a homeless shelter, I didn't know where my life was going to go. I think if I would have known I was going to do this, I would have paid a lot more attention back then. But, you know, but I've learned, this is the thing, through the years, I've learned so much. You know, whether it was organically or, you know, learning it from other people who've done it before me. And I just wanted to get all these lessons that I've learned down on paper so I can share them with other people, because I know how I learn. I learn when people share their experience with me. If they're standing up, they're screaming at me, you got to do this, you got to do that, you should, you should, you should. And you know, they're saying, don't should on me, I won't should on you. If you should me to death, I'm not going to get it. But if you tell me a story that I can relate to, oh, okay, I get it now. And then I can, you know, that's how, like, I'm in a 12-step program, and that's how we share our experience, strength, and hope with each other so that someone else can learn from it. And that's basically what I did in the book. I took, you know, I took my story, and then I weaved in all these, like, my actual stories, the beginning of the book. And then in the other chapters, I weaved in actual things that happened to me to where I learned something in the end. And it's mostly focusing on myself. So I focus on myself in the book, but I know that other people can learn from that, because they can put themselves in my place, or maybe they have been in my place.
Oh, absolutely. And I can say firsthand, I mean, most of the stories that you relate, not maybe in your individual bio portion, because those are very unique, but the actual events where, you know what, let me stop there. I want to go back. Dana, what is the book about before I start explaining what those stories help people do?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you why I came to the decision to write a book about this is because I was always very, very reactive. I reacted with anger or resentment. And I learned that there's a few things that I have to do to keep my anger at bay. And usually my anger usually always comes from fear of getting something or losing something, right? And if I can pinpoint what my anger is, or what am I fearful of, then I can stop my anger from escalating out of control. And then I do something stupid, and then I feel like a jerk, and then I got to go say I'm sorry or not say I'm sorry. And then I'm sitting in all this muck in my head. So through the book, I tell little stories about these different things that happened to me and how I walked my thought process through them to really find out what's going on, not how I perceive things to be, because I perceive things a lot different than they actually are a lot of times. And if I can catch that right away, and that's what I teach in all these little stories, which there's, you know, five stories, because there's five chapters, and it's five stories of how I actually implemented this, realizing what I was fearful of, so that I could get out of the fear and not go into the anger, and then take a good look at myself. Where was I wrong, or where was I right, or what do I have to do to make the situation better?
And quite fittingly, the title of the book is?
The Pause Method. Look at my pause. I have the pause back here. My friend got that from me when I first got it's a little poem. But The Pause Method, and it's P.A.U.S.E. So PAUSE stands for postpone action until sanity emerges. Or I remember while we were writing the book, while I was writing the book, and you gave me so many good insights. And I think it was one of your coworkers that maybe read the book or was reading it. And, you know, when we were going through the process, and we were talking about sanity and serenity, and we kind of mushed the word together, that was serenity. Because you can't have serenity without sanity. You can't have sanity without serenity. So we just mushed it together. And I actually do talk in the book about writing about serenity. No, this is not a typo, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to pick up where I left off. The stories that you tell, I think almost anyone can find an identical or a very similar moment in their life where someone they were close to, sibling, spouse, anyone, push them to the brink where they were going to overreact, probably did overreact. I mean, looking at my own life, that's usually the outcome. When if they took the five simple steps in the pause method, it might have changed the heartache and the outcome.
Right. And there's this, and it works every time for me, and I get angry. Don't get me wrong. I get angry, and I can go from it's amazing how angry I'm everything's okay 1 second, and 2 seconds later, I'm like, a raving lunatic. But luckily I catch it for the most part. But and it's some of the stories in there when I didn't pause and I didn't, you know, and I reacted, like the one story that I talk about where I was at a picnic and somebody was dropping the F-bomb, and I just, like, I was so uncomfortable because there were kids there, and I just burst out, "Watch your language." And then everybody turned around and looked at me, and then, you know, what was wrong with them? Don't they know I'm fixing the problem here? He's using not the right language or whatever. And then the guy walks away. My friend walked away. Like, I really embarrassed him. And then I was the one with the emotional hangover for days. Because if I would have just walked away or just said, "Excuse me," and walked away, or took him off to the side and said, "Excuse me," but, you know, I could have handled it so many different ways. But because I didn't pause. So it's not all about, the book isn't all about, "Oh, I do this perfectly every time and I'm just wonderful." And, you know, no, I'm not perfect. That's for sure. But I know that these simple five steps, if we can, the hard part is remembering to do them, but remembering to just pause, it's basically five steps boiled down into one. If we can remember to do them, We become happier, not the other people may become happier, but we become happier because sometimes we just need to keep our mouth shut.
Well, and you know, you used the word relatable before, and I think that's truly one of my favorite things about your book. It's in no way, shape, or form told from a I've mastered this perspective, right? You have stories where you came out on top and you handled it in the right way, but you have an equal amount of stories where it's like, this one I didn't do so well.
Yeah. And I definitely want to touch base on what you did for me while writing the book, if I may, for a little bit, talk about
I
you.
I will never turn away shameless promotion from somebody else.
Okay. So when I was told so many times, you got to write a book, I thought, okay, I'm going to write this book, but I have never written a book before. I don't even know where to start. So I started to research ghostwriters. What are they? What do they do? Who can help me? And I interviewed probably about 6 ghostwriters. And when I found you, I told you what I needed. And you completely were you adapted to what I needed. And that's what I loved about you, because everybody else I talked, well, give me $10,000, give me $15,000, give me all this money and we'll write the book or we'll do. And I didn't want that. I wanted to write the book. It has to be in my voice, my words, but I needed somebody to coach me. And I liked when you did the intro, the coaching part. And I don't even know if you were actually doing that when I hired you, but you would give me deadlines. Okay, Dana, this is what you're going to do before the next time we're going to meet. This is what you're going to do. You're going to write the chapter one, or you're going to write, and we would meet, whether it was every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks, or sometimes it was once a month. And I would, you held me accountable. And that was something that I really needed. And then you gave me valuable insight on, as we went through the process, on things that maybe didn't make sense, or because when we're writing the book, we're so in it, we can't see the forest through the trees. I was too far in it. And I needed someone like yourself and your team with fresh eyes to look at this and say, does this make sense? Are the stories lining up? Is the flow nice? You know, this sentence quite doesn't make sense. We worked together to make sentences that were my voice, but to make it more clearer. And so the process with you from the time, well, I know from the time that I put my first word down until we were done, I think it was about 18 months.
So believe it or not, most of that was like post-production stuff. So from a client standpoint, to this day, whenever I have a potential client who is exploring the coaching road, mm-hmm. and they ask me, how long does the process take? I give them the best case, which honestly is you, because you were done with the bulk of the writing, the raw draft, I think, Dana, in like 3 or 4 months.
Oh yeah, I was done with that. That was really quick, but there was all the other, the cover and the this and the that, and the walking me through the whole Amazon stuff. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and making sure you were ready, you had your launch, you know, your strategy and all of that in place. But the physical writing, I think your need for me was more in your head than you actually needed it, because you did the bulk of the work on this project. Yeah, we did do the other stuff, mm-hmm. but I warn people when I say I've had clients finish it in 3 or 4 months, but they're not the norm. Mm-hmm. Normally yeah. It is, you know, 9 to 12 months of writing on your own.
Right, right. And I was dedicated. But I'm the type of person who does need someone to be accountable to. Because for me, if you say whenever, that ain't never happening. Whenever ain't never happened. But I guess that's where kind of, you know, pride and ego is an asset, because I didn't want to ever show up on a call with you saying, I didn't do this. I didn't do the, not the, I want to say assignment, not like I was in school, but I didn't achieve the goal that you put in front of me. And yeah, and then I did, we worked together on the cover, which I actually love. You gave me great insight on the, you know, the, cause the cover, can I hold the book up?
Yeah, please.
The cover is like red, yellow, green. So pause, you know, caution, and then go. I love that with the pause and then the light bulb, because I'm an inventor. And then the back cover is pretty cool. Can I show them that? That was me then. This is me now. I was a stripper.
For the record, I love the cover. This was Dana's idea.
You know what? I'm going to just say it like it is. Sex sells, right? It can. And I want people to look at that before. Yeah, I did. I was a stripper for 15 years. It almost killed me. But I mean, with the drinking and the partying, you know, but that's a part of my life that I embrace now. I'm not ashamed of it. It's what I did to survive. A lot of other seedy things went in there, which if you want to know, you can read the book.
Spoilers here.
No.
Everything you just said, Dana, goes back to that word relatable. And I wrote this down. I'm just noticing my note from earlier. And I've never really paid attention to this before, but you associated as a recovering addict. You're clean for 26 years, but you're not telling anyone you are recovered.
I am recovered from, we say in the 12-step world, I'm recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, but I will always be an alcoholic. I can never drink safely again. And I know that through experience, not my experience, but watching other people who have years of sobriety and try to go back out to drink sociably. I've not seen it work. I'm not saying that it doesn't work, and everybody has their own path to get sober and get clean. I choose complete abstinence. So I am in recovery. I am an alcoholic. I mean, I will always be. I'm kind of like they say, once you're a pickle, you can never be a cucumber again.
This is such an interesting conversation and point of view, because honestly, and I don't want to take the spotlight off you, but I have a client who the other day, they used an example of an alcoholic is always an alcoholic in one of their management books. And I pushed back saying, I don't agree with that. But now, I mean, hearing it from you, I'm like, well, I might have to go back to him and concede that I might have been wrong.
And you know what? I haven't had a drink or any mind-altering drug for 26 years. I just celebrated 26 years a couple months ago.
And congratulations.
Thank you. And my life is so good and so clear-headed. I don't even want to test. You know what? Maybe I could drink again. But do I really want to take that chance? I don't think so. I don't miss it. It's not part of my life. Through getting sober and working on myself, and I still attend 12-step meetings and help others who are just starting out on their sobriety path. My life is so good. Why would I even go test the waters, you know? So, and there's a couple different schools of thought on that, but that's just my thoughts.
Well, and just hearing your explanation, I mean, it brings me back to your whole purpose and your message is there are people out there who you have helped, who you can continue helping. And it's almost like, it seems to me, you feel this level of responsibility as much to them as yourself, that if you start drinking again, where does that role model role go for you?
Yeah. And I don't ever want to do that, because I do want to be a role model for people who are just starting out. The life that I have now is beyond my wildest dreams. I never would have imagined that I have the position I have at Eventbrite, that I would have written a book, that I did, this is something else too. I did the Audible version for the book that you turned me on to the company that did the Audible, and they were great, Audavita. And they were fantastic. And the director I had was awesome. And the thing that I loved the most about writing the book, the book's done. Yeah, it's great. This is the year I'm really going to be doing podcasts and getting it out there and hopefully landing a TEDx talk somewhere in the nation. But I learned so much. I know a couple authors. I know people who have written books, but I don't know one person who did their own Audible. Not in my circle. I don't know anybody who did their own Audible. And this is the thing and I listen to a lot of Audible books. My book has so much emotion in it. There's emotion. nobody could read my book but me. There's times that I'm laughing. There's times that you can hear my voice crackling because I'm getting ready to cry because it's a sad part of, or and there's anger in my voice. Nobody could have ever done the audible for my book.
And, you know, it's funny, a wise man once told me, you don't learn to ride a bicycle by watching someone ride a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to get out there and do it. So it's the book writing process is the same. I mean, you can know 50 people who wrote a book until you've done it yourself. And then the next one, until you've narrated it yourself.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, think about it with where you're at, how much easier, and maybe easy is not the right word, but how much further ahead are you than most when you're ready to do your second, because you've went through this experience?
Well, like anything, the first time you do anything, it's scary. You're in uncharted territory. You don't really know, you know, and now, I mean, I already have my second book in my head. I'll give you a little hint of it. It's a book that I want to give to my mother 45 years ago to help me.
I think you mentioned
I was a hellion. If I could go back 45 years from now when I was 15 and say, just tell me this, just tell me that, just do this, just do that, you know. And it's really about, I've been in many, many abusive relationships, and I saw all the signs when I was young and just didn't pay any attention to them. So that's kind of the book. That's the book in my head, but I'm going to, for the year 2024, my job is just to promote.
Absolutely. Because you know what? Sometimes the book you think you're going to write next isn't actually the book you need to write next.
Right.
So
right.
Depending where your journey takes you this year, that may become clearer.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But right now I'm just kind of enjoying the wave. And for me, timing was everything, really. Like the book itself, I think, was done and published on Amazon, of course. I think it was June of last year when it was finally like everything was done. And there was a whole learning curve to that. And all the audible was done, and it's on all the platforms and all that. Then I just kind of paused for a minute and just, okay, let's just take a break here. That's goal is achieved. You know, things, life gets busy and gets in the way. This is what I say about, I got busy. I think that's bullshit. But anyway, no, I just got lazy and I didn't want to do it for a while. I needed to put it on the shelf. Things didn't get in the way. That's an excuse I'm making. I just got lazy and said,
Yeah. And I think that's true for many people. So I'm glad you said that, because the first roadblock people get is it's too much work to write a book. That's their way of talking themselves out mm-hmm. of doing it. There's ways to get it done. You're proof of that. Then the second thing is, now I've done it, but do I really want to share it?
And I know. You
really like talk yourself into that. Because once you put it out there, you can't take it back.
I know. I put it out there. You know what? When the book was done, I let my husband, I kept saying to him through the whole thing, do you want to read the book? No, I don't want to read the book. Are you sure? You know, periodically I would just say, do you want to read the book? I think you should read the book. No, I don't want to read the book. I'm like, I really think you should read the book. He's the mayor of our city. It's the fourth largest city in West Virginia. I think you need to read this book. And my husband knows all about my past and everything. So anyway, one day he came home and he said, I think I want to read your book. So I actually printed it out because it wasn't even ready yet. And I printed it out for him. It's a really easy read. It's 107 pages. It's not like you can read it in a, well, what do they call those? The airport books. You can read it while you're in the airport. And there's not a lot of fluff in it. It's right to the point. There's no like going round, round, round in circles. And so he, a couple of days later, he comes home and he said, I read your book. I was like, oh, geez. He gave me a big hug and he said, I am so proud of you. And yeah, that I didn't expect him. I expect him to say, you can't publish that. But he didn't. He was really, really supportive. And then, you know, I got to tell you, the person that I'm scared to read my book is my mother. You know, I mean, being honest, it's my mother. And if she reads it, she reads it. If she doesn't, she doesn't. You know, she's 91 years old and she doesn't listen to Audible, so I don't got to worry about that. But You know, I'm not going to let that fear rob me of my dreams.
No, and I think what's really rather telling in your story of like personal development is, and again, I'm not going to give away any details here because people need to read the book if they want the details, but the knowing the string of just bad relationships you went through, to now like put that all out there on paper and have such a great, strong relationship where your husband can read the book and say he's proud of you and not, like in the past, that wouldn't have been the case.
No. Well, and it's that freedom of, and I have the one line in my book that says, there's nothing that my enemies can hold against me because I'm putting it all out there, you know? And it's not, and it's a book of hope too, for people who maybe they have a loved one who is right in that muck of what I was in, that there's still hope. You know, I always say, as long as there's breath, there's hope. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes, but I'm putting it out there. This is the year. I'm 100% focused on the book, getting it fully launched and out there.
I'm about to give you the opportunity to tell everyone how to do that, but I want to put in perspective so everyone realizes how serious you are, because I've been trying to get you on the show since I think prior to us even publishing, because all of our clients get first crack at spots on the podcast. Yeah. And you would come, oh, not yet, Matt. So it's January 2nd, and you are our first guest on the show of the year. So yeah. I know this means you have committed to 2024 being the year for this.
Yep, this is the year. This is it. And I'm real excited about it, and I'm mentally prepared for it. So it's the book and the TEDx talk. And the TEDx talk is, I talk about the pause method in my talk, but only briefly. Like, I wrote a book on this. This is what, so, cause you're not, you know, TEDx is a whole different beast. You can't promote things, but you can refer to things. And I'm being trained on that as well. The thing about coaching, and I've been in a couple of different coaching memberships, the Invent Right, which was getting my product to market. I'm an inventor. I got a product on the market. So that's been out there for 5 or 6 years now. But I had a coach. I had somebody who had already done what I wanted to do. You had already done what I wanted to do. The Audible people had already done what I wanted to do. The TEDx people who are coaching me have already done what I wanted to do. So I can't like stress enough how if I don't know what I'm doing, I have to find somebody who's already went down that path and then hold on to their coattails. Say, tell me what to do. I'll do whatever you tell me to do because you know better than I do.
And you just actually segued my closing for me perfectly. So anyone who's looking, you know, whatever you're battling with in your life, whatever bad situation you may have found yourself in, and that's not limited to drugs or alcohol. You know, there's a lot of people out there who want to tell you what, as Dana said earlier, what you should do, but have never walked even an inch in your shoes. So if that sounds like you just can't find the right person to get advice from, you've got to listen to someone who's been there, who's been at rock bottom. Dana has walked that path, and there is something for this book in everybody, not just someone who's struggling, but if you want to appreciate what you have and what you haven't had to go through, read the book.
Yeah. And I know one of your colleagues read the book when it was done. I specifically said, I want somebody to read the book who did not work on it at all. And she read the book and came back and said, wow. And she was a younger girl, I guess, maybe in her 30s, younger. I'm 62. Just so you know, I'm 60. Everybody, I'm 62 years old. I know Zoom hides a lot, but but at 62, I still have dreams and goals and wants and, you know, desires. And I don't want to ever be on my rocking chair when I'm 100 years old saying, boy, I wish I would have wrote that book. So, yeah. And anyway, so your coworker read the book, and I remember her saying to me, I wish I would have known this. It would have stopped me from getting into so many situations that I could have avoided, you know? So, but the pause method is available on Amazon, Dana Knowles. It is, I don't even know how much it is, but I have 10 reviews.
It's worth every penny, whatever it is.
I have 10, it's not much, 10 reviews, and they're all 10 star reviews. And now I got to tell you, 5 of those are my friends. I'm not lying. 5 of them are my friends, but the other 5, I don't know who they are. And that, when your friends give you a 5-star review, yeah, you know, okay, thanks. So, you know, I mean, they say it's a good book, but when you have a total stranger giving you 5-star reviews, that's a big deal to me. So, one thing I can give somebody a little bit of advice, and I found this out through doing the Audible version after the book was completely done, I wish before I even got it out there on Amazon or published it, I wish I would have read the book 3 minutes at a time. Because when you read a book 3 minutes at a time, you're really focused on these little things and you can find the mistakes or the things that aren't quite that, oh, I should have said that different or I would have said that differently. So, because I do it on TikTok too. I'm reading my book on TikTok three or 4 minutes at a time. Yeah, when I get a chance to. I haven't been doing that much lately, but yeah. It's so a good.
We know it's on Amazon. Where can people find out more about you on social media? Where can they reach out to you for opportunities?
Yeah, LinkedIn would be the best. LinkedIn, Dana Knowles, LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Way to get in touch with me.
We will have all of your contact information dropped in the show notes. As always, it's been great to catch up with you. Couldn't think of a better way to start my new year. Couldn't think of a better guest to be the first guest on the Penn Podcast of the year. For everyone listening, you have no idea how much details we have left out of this podcast.
Could be a 90-minute podcast. It could be.
It seriously could. I can't do that. Two, I want you to buy her book or listen to it, because when you hear it told in Dana's voice, it's remarkable. You have accomplished so much. If you're not dreaming, you're dying. So I'm glad that you still have dreams and accomplishments and things. And I can't wait to get you on for the next episode whenever you decide what book 2 is going to be.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
Same here. Everyone at home, please reach out to Dana, buy her book. We always appreciate when you support our guests. You've spent this time with Matt Harms of the Penn Podcast and Dana Knowles. Thank you again, Dana.
Thanks. Bye, everybody.